Hi, this is Paul Warne, and you're listening to the Rams Review Podcast.
This is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussions, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast. Corey and Jack alongside you today at Rams Review HQ. Jack, we did hit a bit of a milestone a couple episodes ago as you and Jason sat down in what was our 200th episode. Yes, two centuries of the Rams Review Podcast. So hopefully you've enjoyed it and you continue to listen. If not, then sorry, you won't be listening to this episode, and that's okay. And in celebration of that 200th episode, Jack, we did put out a Rams View Meets episode where we sat down with Rams Lone Star, former Rams Lone Star, Sam Winnell, to discuss all of his times and things that he got up to at Derby, including his escapade where he went on an illegal night out in Dubai with a few of the lads for some team building, but apparently was unbeknownst to the managers at the time. And yes, he could have rejoined Derby, and Frank Lampard did have him on the phone conversation. So very interesting to hear that as well. I'm sure our guest, Jack, has it tuned into his earbuds all the time because he is a friend of the podcast. He is a Derby County supporter, and he is now a Derby County author, former athletic journalist, Derby County fan, friend of the podcast, and Derby County author, Ryan Conway. Ryan, welcome back to the podcast. How the heck are you, mate?
Thank you so much for having me on again, guys. Honestly, real pleasure to jump on here, and congratulations on reaching 200 episodes. It's a great podcast, one of the best in the Derby County community. You guys do great work. So yeah, pleasure to be on as always.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Ryan. And I know, Ryan, we talked when we met up at the Costas. You listened to it specifically right before you're trying to go to sleep, so it's easy to go and count sheep, because sometimes we waffle on and it's a bit boring. I got it. It's fine. It didn't offend me at all. At least some
than my mom. And you know, listen to it when I'm waking up in the morning, so you're the first voice I hear, and you know, me and my wife have breakfast over it, and it's a great show.
Yeah, like your wife's trying to talk to you, like, I've got to listen to this. So Ryan, we just hit an international break. Apparently, you know, there have been other four League One games that have gone on, but Derby's had an international break. And I want to start with kind of an international call-up that kind of came out of nowhere that I don't think any of us kind of knew that this was going to happen at all. And that is Tyrese Fornut was called into the Sierra Leone side. One of two, well, a former Derby player also plays for Sierra Leone now, in Curtis Davis. But I don't think anybody saw Tyrese Fornut becoming a Sierra Leone international. And he shared, and Mohamed Salah actually shared the field with the world's greatest midfielder that is Tyrese Fornut. So I'm sure that they swap shirts because that's what Mo Salah would want to do, get a Tyrese Fornut Sierra Leone shirt. Ryan, kind of an odd one, isn't it? I'm just going to start in this kind of random place here, but I don't think anybody kind of saw that Tyrese would be called up for Sierra Leone, and surely it's got to be good for the club.
I'm just going to say right off the bat, I am not an expert in Sierra Leone football. I don't know how deep their talent pool is. So I'm just not gonna, you know, despite the fact that the Fornara has not particularly played a lot of games for Derby in terms of sort of the more recent weeks. So sort of when he joined the club, he was starting in most games and finishing them, but in the last few weeks he's been basically resigned to the bench. Don't really know anything about Sierra Leonean midfielders, but I mean, look, you know, congratulations to him getting the call up. You know, that can only be good for him. He played 90 minutes against Egypt, got most of the game, the 0-0 draw against Ethiopia. You know, good for him. Good lad. That's all I have to say on that matter.
And it will, I don't know, again, nobody I don't think here is an expert on Sierra Leone football. I don't know. I'm sure there are somebody who is the source.
It is super weird that, like, there's him and obviously Curtis Davis, former Derby player, like, getting his international debut for Sierra Leone at 38, that is wicked. That is so cool. It's just so Derby County that we have two Sierra Leonean footballers, you know, on our books, or either, you know, former players.
And it's like when Mendes Lang joined Guatemala, like, that's random, kind of out of the blue.
Yeah.
you know, I'm kind of here for it. It's also kind of random.
Yeah, but you know, like good for those guys. You know, go get your international caps, go and get your, you know, your major tournament qualifications. You know, for a lot of these guys, if they are of dual heritage, you know, it might be, you know, like Curtis is, it might be the only chance that they get to play, you know, meaningful games at international level. And you know, and it means something for them as well. You know, they've got, you know, on their dad's side, their mum's side, through their grandfather, whatever it might be that they're qualified through. Like, you know, I think it's a pretty cool thing. You know, it's like Ben Brereton Diaz representing Chile. Like, okay, cool. Like,
yeah, that's kind of random. When he changed his nationality, he became an absolute monster. So hopefully that happens with Tyrese as well, yeah. Because Ben Brereton, the normal English guy, was not very good. And Ben Brereton Diaz, the Chilean international, went on an absolute tear and is now at Villarreal. So,
well, he's cultured now. You know, he was at Blackburn and then he changed his nationality. I don't know, was it his grandmother he qualified through?
I think so, yeah.
You know, so he declared for Chile, went to Villarreal, grew his hair longer. Like, he's full of culture now.
So, and it can only be good, obviously, Ryan. I don't know the situation with Sierra Leone in terms of the African Cup of Nations, but that is coming up in January. So maybe Derby will have one less body that might affect transfer plans, which we're going to talk about later. But I want to talk about, Ryan, some of the results on the field prior to the international break, because I think it's safe to say Derby's season this year has been kind of one step forward and then kind of one step back as well. You know, we had the great win against Barnsley. Everybody was a bit buoyed by that. It was a fantastic performance, 3-0 victory. And then you go into the replay against Crewe at Pride Park and then get rolled over 3-1. What kind of Derby County are we seeing here, Ryan, you know, in terms of the development? Is it frustrating? It's frustrating for me. Is it frustrating for you to see the consistently inconsistent performances that this Derby team are putting together? And what's it going to take for them to start to get some consistency?
Yeah, I think it is frustrating. I think Paul Warren described it best when he said that the team's unpredictable at the moment. You mentioned that the Sterling 3-0 win against Barnsley, and that was actually the moment where I thought, okay, I'm in. I've been a sort of, you know, the routine 2-0 win against Exeter and the game against even Northampton and the game against Wolves. None of it really convinced me. You know, I know Northampton have been playing well. And they, at the time, they had the third lowest XG against in the division, but they were still, you know, they're still at the wrong end of the table. At the time that Derby played them, they were still, I think they were winless in four, you know, so they still weren't picking up positive results, and Derby beat them 4-0, and, you know, it was an okay result, but I was still unconvinced. And the Barnsley game is actually the game where I thought, that's a quality win against a quality opposition, against a team that you're probably going to have to beat again in, you know, sort of April, May time in the playoffs, and then yeah, I mean, it's not just that they lost against Crewe, it's that they go 1-0 up, you know, and somehow contrive to lose that football match. And let's not make no mistakes, you know, this was not a weak side. You know, Curtis Nelson and Cashin started at centre back, Max Bird started, Collins started, Barkhazen started, Hurahan started, Fozzy started. This was a good team that went out there, went 1-0 up, and then lost the game at home. It was a real sort of, yeah, like come back to earth moment, life comes at you fast moment, because that was a really strong team that went out there at home and got turned over by, you know, a team that they should beat. It would be an extreme reaction to say it undoes all of their hard work, but it does still show that they do have this level of ineptitude in their locker, you know, that they will just turn up for a game against a team that you think, this, like, if all the boys turn up and perform how they should perform, this will be 2-0, and they lose 3-1. You know, they still have that in the locker, and that's a concern. That is a concern, because your talent level might be good enough to overcome those deficiencies, you know, every now and again. But if you put in that level of performance, you know, elsewhere, it's more often than not you are going to get beat. And here they did, you know. And if that happens in the league, they'll get beat again, particularly against better opposition.
Do you think, Ryan, that it's a systematic issue of Paul Warren's coaching style and his tactics? Because there has been calls weeks ago for for Paul to go? Or do you think it's just some of the players are just maybe not at the level that on paper we think that they're at? Or is it a bit of a mixture of both? How do you fix this?
I'm not quite sure, because against Crew, I think they played four at the back. You know, I think it was Wilson, Nelson, Cashin, Fozzy, and then sort of Hourihan in midfield. Corey Smith was in there as sort of the holder, I think. You know, so he'd gone from three at the back to four at the back. And I think that generally, this isn't about the Crew game because they didn't play this system, but I think generally three at the back or five at the back when out of possession is a counter-attacking system. And I think when I think of good teams that play that system, you know, it's Conte's Chelsea. Now, I'm not comparing the two. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison. Of course it's not. But when you look at how that system is played best, Conte's Chelsea used it as a lightning-quick, direct counter-attacking system, and that was the base of it. I think when Wolves, sort of Rotherham teams at their best, were direct counter-attacking sides, very sometimes very direct, but they were direct counter-attacking teams playing off a solid base. I think that's what it lends itself to best. I think the calls for them to be more attacking, for maybe this underdog mentality is sort of a phrase that's been thrown around a little bit on social media, and I kind of get it. You know, I don't think Derby ever go into games thinking they're underdogs. They're one of the best teams in the division. But I think sometimes the approach, they can be very passive at times. They can sit off teams at times. They can try and soak up pressure at times. And I think the way that the game is trending, I think it's about aggressive counter-pressing. I think it's about, particularly if you're meant to be a dominant force, I think it's about having an aggressive midfield that can push, having a forward. And I think maybe Connor Washington and Martin Wycombe, when he's fit, were kind of brought in to do a little bit of that pressing from the forward. Under Koku, Wycombe's often the press trigger, so he would often be the one that started the press and then everything else would follow from him. And I think that's what, in my head, that is what I think of when I think of an aggressive front foot football, because it's easy to throw that generic term around without actually underpinning what that means. It's sort of intangibles. And for me, that's what it means. I think this system is a very sort of, you know, soak up the pressure, hit on the break, but they aren't even really doing that particularly effectively. And if you want to be an aggressive front foot team, I think it's a lot about counter-pressing, a lot about sort of, to borrow a term from American football, kind of gang tackling, you know, sort of all, you know, getting your midfielders and your players in and around the ball when you lose it and get it back within, you know, sort of 3 to 5 seconds. And so, yeah, I do think they could stand to be more aggressive out of possession. I'm not sure if that's a coaching point, a personnel point. I'm not sure where that lies, but just from what I've watched, that's what I think would be a great help for Derby going forward, is to be more aggressive out of possession.
And Ryan, I mean, that's a good idea. I like that, Ryan, because I think when you have a team on the front foot and you kick off, and you sit there and you dictate play and you sit there and go, you can try to play, but I'm going to be right in your face, you know, to use another American football term, kind of smash mouth kind of defense and, you know, defense in kind of your space, hunt in packs and make sure that when you're pressing, it's not a one-man press, which is easy enough to play around and leaves you exposed in other areas. You all have to kind of press together. You know, there's a lot of factors. Like you said, there's you know, there's fitness levels to take care of. There's, you know, energy management. We don't have the biggest squad and those kind of things as well. But yeah, I would certainly like to see them to press a little bit more and to stamp their authority on games, because at the end of the day, I don't think people, especially Derby County supporters, are used to Derby playing in kind of an underdog mentality kind of way. You know, we're going in, we're used to a certain brand of football. Yes, I understand we're in League One. It's not a comparison to the past, but traditionally Derby have always tried to be play on the front foot to try to get different things. And I think it's kind of a culture shock to sit back and go, whoa, what do you mean we're going to sit back here and kind of soak up the pressure and then try to hit on the break, when maybe we can still play that way, but we can press a little bit higher up the field, which again takes the pressure off your back line and allows people to, you know, you attack further up the field, right? It's field position, Ryan, like the NFL. If I'm only 20 yards from the end zone, it's better than being 40 yards from the end zone. So if I pick the ball up 30 yards from goal, it's different than picking up in my own defensive third. You know, it can create a lot more chances and a lot more kind of chaos and uncertainty can happen. And you know, when that kind of breeds in football, anything can kind of happen with that.
Yeah. And I think also in midfield, I would like to see a lot more from Bird and Hourihan. Now, Hourihan, I think, has played I think actually, to their credit, I think they've both played better recently. But particularly on ball, I want to see them better. Off ball, it's a little bit different. You know, neither are particularly defensive minded. Bird is okay. We've seen him play as a screen, as a defensive screen four, and he's always been just okay at that. That's not a criticism. It's not a praise. It's like, yeah, he's fine. But he does his best. He does his best work on the ball, and I'd like to see both of them try and press the issue more in terms of trying to find those through balls and trying to play guys through. And obviously, that is part of the system itself. That only works if you've got the runners, and it only works if you've got, you know, guys going beyond you, or like, you know, the offside traps being beaten properly and things like that. But I would like to see them to start to attack down the middle. A little bit more, you know. I would love to see Hourihan and Bird picking out Kane Wilson runs from the right wing, you know, sliding him through, and the little Wilson cutback for Collins. I would love that to be a thing consistently, you know. And that isn't to say that they can't do that, but I think that's sort of what I would like to see more of from them, you know, because Hourihan and Bird are two very gifted technical players, you know, particularly Hourihan, who we've seen in, you know, an Aston Villa team that went to the playoff final, who we saw last season playing, you know, once he got up to speed and play some very, very good football along with sort of McGoldrick and things like that. And so we know that is in them. It would just be good to see that more, for them to carve teams open down the middle a little bit more.
I agree. And I think if you have that kind of midfield general position taken care of, where you know you can send out either Bird or Hourihan at both of them, and they can both, you know, you can rely on them to be a 6 out of 7, 7 or 8 out of 10 every week, and you know that this guy's going to get on the ball, and either whether it's Hourihan or Bird or both of them, one of the two is going to dictate every single game. Like, just give him the ball, let him put his foot on it, let him dictate. You know, that's kind of what I want to see. That's the next progression for me in the development of Max Bird. You know, and you want to see that more of Connor Hourihan, is give me the ball. If other things are struggling, I'm going to lift up my teammates and I'm going to make something happen here. Yeah, we might make a few mistakes or a wayward pass here and there, but right now, you know, Derby's midfield's finally balanced, but it doesn't feel like they ever have somebody who puts their foot on the ball and says, I'm going to stamp my authority on this game. It's going to run through me and we're going to go out and win the game. You know, sometimes you don't see that. And I think I'd like to see that a little bit more from Max Bird and Connor Hourihan. Ryan, one more question before I turn it over to Jack to ask the next few. As we sit here, Derby is seventh in the league. We've got 16 points. We're out of the Carabao Cup, out of the FA Cup, and still in the Bristol Street Motors Trophy. Go figure. Yeah, okay. Thank you, sponsors. But yeah, so in the league, though, we've got 16 games played. Obviously, Derby are a bit too behind, I think, up to this point. Sitting seventh, 27 points, same as Barnsley in sixth, and same as Blackpool in eighth. Do you think, and you're active on social media, Ryan, the calls for the fact that Derby, I guess, have had a poor start to the season, do you think that's a little over-exaggerated? Do you think there's still more to come from this team? Do you think we're well-positioned, being at this kind of inflection point in the season, being as it is the November international break? Do you think we're finally poised, or a little bit below expectation, or where you would want to see us?
I think we're a little bit below expectations. In fact, you know, and Paul Warren has said that they're performing below expectations. So, you know, we don't have to read the tea leaves when he's stuffing them down your throat. They are performing below expectations. They were the preseason favourite to win the division. They should have been, because they had a good, you know, they have a good squad. David Clowes went on the record with BBC Radio Derby and said that he believed that the budget was good enough to get them out of the division. Now, I don't know what that budget is, but he believed it was good enough to get out of the division. Obviously, when Jason Knight was sold, and I think Paul Warren said that the money won't be reinvested, you know, and he's already talking about, if you can't get players in this market, you have to go to the foreign market. And we've heard stuff like that all the time. You know, Koku said that, Wayne said that, you know, if you can't get players over here, you have to go to the foreign market. It's almost a nothing statement, because that is obvious. If you can't get players over here, yeah, you have to go abroad. That is basic recruitment. So it's almost a nothing statement. But the long and short of it is, yes, they are underperforming. They should be pushing the top two, and right now they're 8 points off second, 8 points off top, 8 points off second. Portsmouth and Oxford, who look very, very good. And yeah, it's been disappointing. Now, they've won their last three league games at home. You know, it, sort of the Crewe Alexandra, the Crewe game was as was the sort of 2-2 draw for the first leg, you know, beating Wolves 4-1. Okay, fine. And the Stevenage result was not good. Neither was the Shrewsbury game, obviously, where Conor Hourihan and some fans had a bit of an exchange. But they've won their last three games at home. If you are going to make the top six, if you're going to try and push for the top two, you have to be good on your own patch. And Derby were not great on their own patch until this recent run. So that is encouraging as we end sort of 2023, which is good because Paul Warren has not had a good 2023. And when we look at things, you know, pretty much since the run of 15 unbeaten league games ended in February, you know, this team has won 14 football matches in 2023. Three of those coming, obviously, in the last three home games. So it had been tough sledding this calendar year for Warren. I think they do need a good transfer window. They need to find, in my opinion, they still need to find the replacement for David McGoldrick. James Collins is not the same profile of player that David McGoldrick is. David McGoldrick is like a 9.5. You know, he'll play up front as a bit of a poacher, but he drops in as a 10 as well. They need to find that profile of player. I think it's easier to say they need a tough tackling midfielder. I don't particularly think they do. They need a bona fide goal scorer. I think of all the things that have changed between this season and last season is David McGoldrick's goals. You know, I think it's sort of sometimes you can't see the, what is it, you can't see the wood for the trees. It's easy to get cute and think they need a left-footed centre-half or they need a tackling midfielder. David McGoldrick accounted for 30 goals from this football team last season. They need to replace that properly. You know, Collins has got, he's got seven in the league this year. It's an okay return. Do we think, you know, he's got no assists? It's not really his thing. But, you know, seven league goals from 16 games. Yeah, it's okay. I still, you know, I mean, one of them was, he gets him in bunches almost. I would still like a proper, consistent, you know, return from him. And I still think that's what Derby is searching for. So, yeah, going into this window, it's going to be a big window as to if they continue to underperform or if they can turn that corner properly and start to get somewhere near the level that we expected of them in pre-season.
Jack?
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, I'll just go back a few minutes to what we were talking about with Sierra Leone and whether they're in AFCON. From what I can see, they're not, so Tyrese Fauna won't be heading off. So as it stands, we wouldn't be impacted by that, but I guess we hope we will be. And Ryan Niambi will sign a new deal because he'll be off to the African Cup of Nations. But I think there we've probably got enough cover with right backs, even though they are different profiles of right back to him. So I think you're right, Ryan. I think the key thing is McGoldrick's goals, because when you think about the amount of times he pulled a rabbit out of a hat, which turned it from, you know, a draw to a win. I mean, I did the maths. I think last season it was 16 points, his goals won Derby. Now, obviously not a perfect metric, because if he's not playing, someone else is there, they might score some of the goals. But you know, that showed, you know, just how many kind of match-winning goals and things there were there. But I mean, how do you even begin to go about replacing somebody of that quality? I mean, Paul Warren said it a month or so back, where, you know, he could admit now the dust had settled that maybe McGoldrick was just pretty much irreplaceable. What, you know, what do you look for there in terms of replacement? Because it's one thing replacing the goals, but it's everything else he offered as well.
Yeah, I think the McGoldrick thing is really interesting because no one expected him to be as good as he was. You know, I think the consensus was that he wasn't washed, but League One was probably his level. I think that was sort of the consensus. And I think it was pretty obvious that, you know, he was a class above it. Like, he probably still could have played in the Championship last season. He was really, really good. And it's not just the goals. You're right. It is those positions just behind the striker that he would pick up, you know, that the number 10 role, that, you know, really clever at picking up positions, sort of something that his play, even not as a sort of, you know, number 10 who'd been playing it since day dot. You know, he played in centre midfield a little bit for Sheffield United. He'd been a striker. You know, he's not a natural number 10. But that was the sort of number 10 play that we've been after since, like, what, Mason Mount? And I'm not saying that, I'm not saying they are as good. Of course, I'm not saying they are as good. But in terms of the impact they have on the team, that's the kind of play that you're after. Those guys are difficult to find. He was always going to be irreplaceable. Of course he was. Getting 23 goals and 7 assists at League One level and then walking for nothing. Yeah, like, guys that produce that who were 10 years younger and are 25, they're being bought by Championship clubs. And maybe a Premier League club is taking a stab at them and chucking them in, you know, putting them out on loan. Like, yeah, he was always going to be impossible to replace. So the production has to be made up in the aggregate. Ryan, I've said this loads and loads and loads of times. You have to make that production up in the aggregate. So are you going to be able to get 10 goals spread evenly between, say, Washington, Collins and Wycorn? Are each of them going to be able to get 10 league goals? I don't know. Probably not. and if they're not, can Hourihane chip in? Is Bird going to chip in? Is, you know, Mendes Lang has got 4-4. You know, he's playing his best football since January. You know, he'd had sort of, and I'm not sure if fatigue had played a part, and obviously maybe the flying back and forth representing Guatemala, I'm not sure if that played a part. But he looked knackered come the end of the season, and he kind of looked knackered to start this season. You know, which footballers play an insane amount of games in the modern game, so I wouldn't blame him if his legs just felt a bit heavy. But yeah, he's playing some superb football at the moment. If Mendes Lang can get, I think it was 11 goals he got last season. If he can repeat that production, then okay, we're in some sort of shape here. But those 30 goals that were going to be accounted for are going to have to be spread out. You know, so the goals that Collins got last season, he's going to have to get those plus a share of McGoldrick's goals. Washington is going to have to get the 7 that he got, I think, with Rotherham last year, plus a share of McGoldrick. So you're asking a lot of the team. And they were pretty good at spreading the goals around last season. They've been okay recently at spreading the goals around a little bit. So yeah, they just have to keep on doing that. I think where it will let you down, it'll be one of those games where, you know, Derby lose a game that 1-0 that they should have won, perhaps, and you just go, that's where you need a 20 goal a season striker to put them chances away. That's what we don't have, and I think it'll show up worryingly in some of the bigger moments. You know, where you think that's where David McGoldrick puts that away, or any striker, you know, who is of a certain caliber, puts that away, and Derby win the game, and that might be the difference.
Yeah, I'm just going to put something out there as well. I genuinely don't know if I've mentioned this previously, so apologies if I have on the podcast. But in terms of Conor Hourihane and his goals and talking about that and the kind of technical play, I mean, something that I've kind of looked at, I mean, it's not, you know, I don't think you'd play him in the McGoldrick role, but in terms of that technical ability on the ball being a level up, you know, I think one of his best performances last season, from what I can remember, was the 4-0 win against Accrington, where they let him get really into really quite advanced positions and almost play, you know, at moments out on the left flank as well. And he had that real freedom of creativity there. So, I mean, for me personally, it's interesting seeing him kind of sitting in a lot of the time now, you know, maybe with a little bit more of a restricted role. I mean, the other thing that's interesting with that and his set pieces and his shooting from distance, I mean, I think we kind of hoped that there'd be, you know, a couple of goals extra added in there. And he got, what, 7 goals, 10 assists last season. If he could get to 10 and 10 with, you know, just, as I say, couple more goals from set pieces or whatever, it's little things like that as well. But during the induction week for my university course this year, we had a performance psychologist who has worked with Conor Hourihane come in, and he was talking a lot about the way they do that and the amount of work that they did in terms of the positions he gets into and visualising what he does at that point. So there's clearly been a lot of work earlier in his career to get into the ridiculous quality he's got around the edge of the box. And yeah, I think it's something, especially having heard a little bit about all of that, I'd quite like to see a bit more of again, because I mean, it might all just be in my head, but I feel like we've not seen quite as much this season of him a little bit further forward.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think recently he has sort of been as a defensive midfielder, sort of playing a little bit as a screen at the base of midfield. You know, he's got a couple of goals this season, but he's not scored since early September. Yeah, it would be good if he could add some of those, could add, you know, goals to his to the team at the turn of the year, and because as you said, he's capable of doing that. You know, it's good. I suppose one, and I'm only theorising here, but having one sitting him at the base of midfield is probably good for control. You know, yeah, that he's going to be calm in possession. He's going to be smooth on the ball. He's going to, you know, sort of tick along a bit like a metronome, a little bit like how sort of Bird and Rooney were a little bit under Cocu, or a little bit how sort of Burden and maybe Knight to a lesser extent was under Rooney. You know, Huddleston was another example of that sort of that really deep lying playmaker who just kept everything ticking along. But he does carry a goal threat, and if you play him so deep that he's not getting anywhere near the opposition box, you nullify that goal threat a little bit, you know, because he can hit him from just outside the area, and yeah, he sort of can drive into the box late a little bit. So yeah. And I think they'll need goals from him. They'll need goals from Bird. They'll need goals from, you know, from whoever. They'll need goals from Sibley, if they're gonna basically sort of carry on this recent run of league form, particularly at home.
That's the key word, actually, or phrase: league form. The league form is starting to come together a little bit, and it's something we were talking about last week or the week before in terms of how home form's improved and the away form's dipped now. And it's just, I mean, this is a bit of a nothing statement, but we just need a balance where if we could get a little bit better away from home again and use what worked at the start of the season away from home and keep what's working now at home. I mean, there's a balance there. You see, I mean, Warren says it a lot, we're nearly there. There's a lot of good moments. You see games like Barnsley where it's great, but it just doesn't quite, it's not quite there yet. And we just need to find it consistently, don't we?
Yeah, at some stage, these moments, they aren't going to be enough. You're going to have to go to, you know, Bolton, Oxford, Portsmouth. You're going to have to go to those places and get a result. And we'll see sort of just for the turn of the year, they go to Oxford on December the 29th. You know, you're going to have to go. Those will be real acid tests. We said it against Stevenage and they failed that one hugely. We said it against Barnsley and they passed that one massively. So sort of where it's where we are with them is we actually don't know if they're any good or not. Like in terms of, are they going to be good enough to get out of the division, essentially. That's what the goal is. The objective is to get back into the Championship this season. Do we know if they're going to be good enough to do that? And I think also looking at if they're good enough to do that, you have to project a little bit as well, because I think what happens with a lot of teams that have playoff promotion ambitions, and I don't mean this in League One, I mean this across every division, is it's not just to getting up. The next objective is to stay up. That's how you have to think. Is this team, does the nucleus of this team, is it good enough to stay up? If not, how much surgery needs to be done to it? Does it need to be a dirty phrase coming up? Or does it need to be a Nottingham Forest situation where you sign everyone on God's green earth? And that form the nucleus for them staying up? Or do you feel that you have a good enough base to stay up how you are? And that's how Derby have to think, is, okay, attacking this window, do we think, one, we are in a position where we're going to be good enough to go up, and two, sort of looking towards next season, if we go up, how much surgery will need to be done on this squad. Now, they're in a tricky position because obviously they don't go up. Max Bird is out of contract, Lewis Sibley is out of contract, Ian Cashin is out of contract. They've got a lot of the good young players that are out of contract. So there's pressure going up this season. They have a tough-ish run to end the season. You know, they host Bolton in March. They host Blackpool in March. They go to Portsmouth in April. Wickham in April. Wickham is always a tough game for Derby. And then you've got teams, you know, Cambridge, Leyton Orient, who might be on the beach, might not be, depending where they are, and Carlisle, who are fighting for their lives. So it's going to be tough for them to get into the top six and to make a real fist of it. And we actually still don't quite know how good they are. They keep having moments. They keep having moments. They also keep having moments of boneheadedness where they will lose 3-1 against Crewe Alexandra at home. So you can cling to the moments of real quality, but that can't overshadow the moments of real concern that this team sometimes has. Because sometimes the concerning moment is just like, they kind of always look like conceding sometimes, which is weird. Because other times they have a measure of control. Against Barnsley, they had a real measure of control where they never really looked like conceding. I think Barnsley's first shot was like from 40 yards in like the 88th minute or something mental like that. But then against Crewe, they kind of looked like conceding every single time Crewe had the ball. So, you know, these moments of quality are interspersed with equal moments of idiocy.
Ryan, you mentioned three players there that I kind of want to spend the next 4 or 5 minutes chatting about. First two, Max Bird and Aaron Cashin, as you said, are out of contract in the summer. We know that both players had bids rejected for them in the summer, this past summer. Do you see both of them when the window slams shut at the end of January? Do you see both of them in Derby County colours? Or, you know, is it better for Derby to recoup some of the money maybe early in the window that because they're going to lose for a tribunal fee or for a nominal fee or for free, right, in the summer? Is it better to recoup some money now or do you, because they're replaceable, or do you need them to push to get up to the championship? And if you don't, you risk losing them for nothing.
If the goal is to get out of the division, you need a strong squad. They're going to stay. I think, you know, if they were going to sell them, they'd have probably sold them in the summer when their value was more, when they had 6 months extra on their contract, they'd have sold them then. You know, they turned down decent offers. I thought for Bird and for Cashin, I thought they turned down, you know, half decent offers. They did let Knight go. And in fairness, Knight was probably the most replaceable one of them, just because he's like a little bit like Corey Smith, basically, in that like he kind of does a little bit of everything wherever you go. But yeah, I think there'll be Derby County players at the end of the window. I don't think either will be Derby County players come this time next year, however. To me, there are different types of all-in move. Some of it is spending money to bring in loads of players. Some of it is keeping players who you know are out of contract to try and make a push. Borussia Dortmund did this, right, back in the day with Robert Lewandowski, where they rejected bids from Bayern, saying, no, we're going to have one more crack at the league in the Champions League, and then he went for free. This is basically that on a League One level. You know, they're going, no, we're going to keep they're going to keep their best centre-back, they're going to keep one of their best midfielders. They are two of their best players from top to bottom at the squad, and go, no, you know, we need these guys if we're going to get out of the division. And if they do go up, they will stay. I think that's what, you know, if Derby go up, this is win-win for everyone. If Derby go up, I think those two... If Derby go up, I actually think Cashin might move on, but I think Bird will stay. But that would still be a win. If they don't go up, both will go. But that, I think that's the kind of risk that you run when you are trying to get out of the division.
Let's talk about Louis Sibley, Ryan. Four different Derby County managers now he's played under. And I think it's safe to say that he's never really asserted himself into a starting role and had the growth that we kind of thought when he burst onto the scene. His contract is also up in summer. Louis Sibley, is he a Derby player at the end of the window? Or is it just we keep him, you know, because we need numbers in the squad? Maybe he chips in with a couple of goals and then sayonara in summer. Best of luck in the rest of your career. Has Louis Sibley's time at Derby run its course in terms of, yes, he's talented, but he has not taken that next step that we expect to see? Where do you sit on Louis Sibley?
No, I actually think he might stay. You know, he's Derby through and through. And I think in the right role, I think he's good to keep. You know, he always performs better coming off the bench. And, you know, players have careers sort of like that. And he might just be one of them that, you know, you need an injection of pace, you need a bit of urgency. Get Louis Sibley off the bench and he goes and does his thing. And I think you know that role, if he would be willing to accept it, because financially and terms have to be right, and also the sort of, I guess, playing agreement has to be right. But there's a world where I can see him being tied down for another couple of years, you know, with a bit of a reduced, well, not reduced role, but more of a squad role than an every, you know, an every week starter. And it is. I'm not going to say unfortunate because he's still a young man, but it is frustrating that. I still think the best games of his career were his first 10 games of his career. That's frustrating. And you could argue that they are the best because opposition managers didn't have any tape on him, right? They didn't, you know, they would have had some stuff in the under 18s, but you don't know how that translates to the academy. We don't know how that translates to the first team, you know, the game against Blackburn, and then sort of we had to wait 3 months to see him again, and then the match against Millwall. It is frustrating. It's frustrating that it seems that there's, you know, managers don't seem to know what to do with him, but also you couldn't, you know, the player doesn't seem to know what kind of player he wants to be, perhaps. I mean, I think Sibley is better as a free eight. I think running into space. I don't think he is a 10. I don't think he plays at the top of an attacking trident behind a striker. I don't think that's where he's best, actually. Louis Sibley's best when he's running in motion and he needs space to run into. So therefore, you play him as a free eight where he's got loads of space to run into, not as a 10 where the space is constricted. That's just my opinion. But, you know, he's been played on the wing, he's been played as a 10, he's been played as a wing back, he's been played everywhere. You know, he's been played everywhere. And at some stage, we said this about Jason Knight, you know, at some stage, it's on the player to grasp hold of a role and say, this is it. You know, as you mentioned, Corey, four managers have been at the club and kind of haven't really figured him out. You could argue that Louis Sibley hasn't figured it out himself. Yet, he's still a very young man. You know, there might, you know, the penny might drop and he might get hold of a role. And it might, you know, it might be on the wing. It might be as a 10. You know, it might be as a wing back. Who knows? But, you know, for him, for his development, it'd be really good for him to just pin down a position. Yeah, I think that'd be good for everybody to just be like, when you think of Louis Sibley, you think he's an 8, he's a 10, he's a winger. And at the moment, we're still having that conversation of like, well, what is he really? We basically did that throughout Jason Knight's whole Derby career. So I'm going, well, what is he really? And we didn't really know. And it was, you know, maybe he's forever going to be a utility man. But I think that does him a disservice because I think both Knight now, obviously Bristol City, and I think Sibley for Derby, they have qualities that could be consistently used in a consistent position. But, you know, everything has to be right. The conditions have to be right.
Ryan, one more question for you before we move on to more personal matters for you. CJ Hamilton was the latest name linked to Derby County this week from Blackpool, a winger that my dad loves because my dad is a Blackpool supporter. And I know he's got a lot of pace, CJ Hamilton and whatnot. Obviously, Ryan, I'm not going to necessarily ask for specific names. If you give them to me, great. If not, that's okay as well. Where do Derby need to strengthen in this transfer window coming up in January to be able to make that push to be competitive, either for to go up automatically in the top two or to be in that 4-6 in the playoffs? What do they need to do in this squad transfer window wise to bring stuff in? We talked about a consistent goal scorer. What else? What else makes this team a solid top six team? No question.
A consistent goal scorer. They could do with another wide man. Yeah, I think they could do with another winger. Obviously, they've kind of had injury problems on the flanks. Obviously, Kane Wilson, who's a bit more of a fullback, but came in injured, and then Callum.
Joe Ward Callum. And Callum Elder have both been injured.
Callum Elder's been injured as well. He's sort of been in and out of the team, and he was signed to sort of be, you know, right sided on the right side there. And obviously, we don't know if Mendes Lang will tire again at the end of this season like he did last. So I think, you know, addressing winger would be good. Addressing striker would be good. If there is budget left, whatever that budget is. Let's say they get those two nailed down, and if there's budget left, I wouldn't mind seeing a proper Walter Carey midfielder. That sounds hypocritical because I've just said they didn't need a tough tackling one. But if there's budget left, I think getting a midfielder would give them a different profile, because I think Corey Smith can do it, and I think obviously we had Liam Thompson doing it before injury, and he's still a young man and things like that. I think that's a position that you can fill, I'm not going to say easily, but I think it's one that's easier to teach to a current squad member if you've got it, and I think it's one that you could pick up okay. But yeah, I think it would give them a different profile of midfielder. Because I will say sort of, you know, the striker that was brought from Arsenal, John Jules.
Yeah.
I think he's been, you know, obviously he's been injured, he's been in and out. I think when he's played, he's been quite disappointing. I don't know how blasphemous that is to say, but I think he's been the worst of the
He's made little to no
strikers.
Impact.
Yeah, basically, and that's a shame. I wouldn't be surprised if that loan move was cut. So, you know, he's only played a couple of games. You know, he's been injured, but his first two games that he played, I wasn't particularly impressed by, and he's been injured with a thigh problem since. I wouldn't be surprised if they go back to the drawing board with him and maybe just go, look, this hasn't worked out. We're gonna move on.
I'll ask for your hot take, Ryan. Who was a better player for Derby County this season, Tyrese John-Jules or Elliot Embleton? Go.
Probably John-Jules. I don't know. neither of them. But yeah, go on. I'll go with John-Jules. I mean, this, you know, the John-Jules thing, you know, he's picked up a thigh injury and missed basically every game since the Bolton game. You know, Embleton. I mean, the Embleton signing, I was really excited by when we made it. You know, yeah. Really, really good player. You know, these things suck and they happen, and we always think that they just happen to Derby County. But yeah, they could do with restocking those cupboards, as you know, as things go.
Well, Ryan, I want to switch gears here and talk a little about you now, because you now are an accomplished author, well known author in the Derby area. Talk me through a little bit about your book. It's Pride Before the Fall. I've read it. It's a very good book, but people don't need to listen to me talk about it.
Have you reviewed it? Have you left a review on Amazon?
I'm not able to do it yet because it's not available on the American Amazon, and it gives me a notification of I can't do this, but I will as soon as it's available on there.
Well, what do you know?
Ryan, so the Pride Before the Fall, it's about Derby County after Frank Lampard, essentially. Well, just before Frank Lampard, up until, you know, basically Paul Warren covering all the shenanigans in between. Tell me a little bit about the book and tell me a little bit about what you learned while you were writing it.
I learned that writing a book is really hard. I knew it was going to be a slog, you know, it was going to be a year of work and 80,000 words, but it was even harder than I imagined, and I knew it was going to be difficult. And I think I learned this is I think I learned the value of suffering. You know, in football terms, you hear Guardiola say all the time about his team suffer. You know, I suffered at times writing that book, having to force yourself, you know, to sit at a keyboard and write 2,000 words when you don't really want to. It's difficult. Because you have a deadline, you know, you have a contract, you have a deadline to meet, and you know, during that time, I was getting married, I changed jobs, I moved house. You know, I was doing a lot of real life things as well, you know, a hell of a lot of real life things. So strapping yourself down to your office chair and writing when you don't really want to write is difficult. You know, working hard all through the week like we all do, and then thinking I've got my Saturday. Well, no, you don't, because you have to sit in your office for 4 hours and 5 hours, 6 hours, and you know, transcribe or knock out 2,000 words. And there was one, I think it was November. I remember last November, I'd not particularly written that much. And I remember one weekend, I just wrote like 12,000 words of the book over one Saturday, while my wife was out. I think she was getting her hair done. And I just like sat in my office and just like wrote 12,000 words. And yeah, like my Saturday was gone. Before, you know, I basically just had the Sunday to do a bit of life admin and Sunday night to chill. And then it was Monday again. And like, yeah, it kind of burned you out a little bit. you know, so but when I got my hands on it for the first time, and when I saw it in, you know, in Waterstones, when I saw it on Amazon's website, you know, when I saw it, it was just, it was really, really cool. You know, it was something that was just like, wow, I actually wrote a book. That's wild. you know, that's like, that's really weird. I never, you know, I never envisaged that I would be an author. So that's really cool. Yeah, the book itself, as you mentioned, I basically start at the 2019 playoff final. Because that, you know, it's a real flash, you know, that's basically one of the big flashpoints of Derby's modern history. It's one of the big sliding doors moments. You know, what happens if Derby go up on that day? You know, genuinely, like, what happens if Derby go up on that day? You know, are they the, in the Aston Villa position? Because Aston Villa right now are genuine contenders to break into the top four. Now, Aston Villa had £100 million player in Jack Grealish in their squad, as well as other very, very good players, I will say. But they were staring down the barrel of some financial irregularities as well. Like, it really was a sort of, you know, both teams have pushed all their chips into the middle of the table and gone, right, okay, this is the game. You know, and Aston Villa have never looked back since. And, you know, like, fair play. You know, they've done a remarkable job since. And, you know, Emery is doing a cracking job right now. What happens if Derby go up on that day? And that felt like the natural starting point. Right, that felt like the natural starting point, because Lampard goes, Mount goes, Tomori goes, Harry Wilson goes, you know, Ashley Cole goes. you know, did it felt like a real sort of flash. And then obviously Rooney comes in and Philip come in, and you sort of like, okay, this is so weird. We've gone from sort of one England legend to another, in terms of one from the managers, and now we've got one on the beat. You know, we've gone from one very cultured midfielder to another who's going to be managing the team. Sort of all the star power around Derby County, who are a big club, but they're attracting, you know, Wayne Rooney, which it just didn't something. You know, it just didn't compute. You just couldn't compute it. And then, yeah, sort of then we have 3 months of things. Well, 3 months of things being relatively normal, I guess. The car crash, the drink driving accident, not. But then once we get to January, that's where things start to kind of really unravel off the field. And then, yeah, it was sort of this, just this odyssey, you know, going through all of this. And I think what's important to say, and I've said this, you know, on other interviews I've given, is if you buy the book expecting a scandal-filled 200 pages, you're going to be disappointed. You've bought the wrong book. One, for legal reasons, because I think what cannot be overstated is just genuinely how fragile the club was going through those periods, and obviously genuinely how sort of legally bound individuals involved in that club are. There are still issues going on to this day, you know, involving, I think, sort of, you know, Kirchner and you know, things of that nature. So yeah, like, there were some things that legally we definitely couldn't say or even hint at. There were some things. There were a lot of people. Obviously, you've read the book, Corey. You can see the long list of people that just said, "Nope, don't want to talk about it." Which is fair enough. Like, no, this is something not many people wanted to talk about. And I think that was, you know, part of my reflective period was I look at it and go, sort of, this would have been a cracking book to write in 10 years' time, when everyone's retired and you probably can talk about it more freely. But then in 10 years' time, someone else might have written it. You know, I wanted to make sure that I didn't have to live with the consequences of having the idea and never executing the idea. That would have eaten me up. So yeah, that was one of those things that I learned about. This was an odyssey. This was an odyssey going through all of Derby's last 4 years, 5 years, all the way through to, as you mentioned, the Sheffield United, Sheffield Wednesday game, excuse me, last season, and it was quite emotional actually reliving all of that. Going, oh my god, like, all this stuff happened, and it was, you know, I was reporting on a lot of it throughout that time, and it was only when I pulled back and when I was writing all of this stuff and looking at it, going like, man, like, these fans, they went through some things. they went through some things, and you look and be like, genuinely remarkable, just genuinely remarkable.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, Ryan. You know, you were covering Derby at that time for The Athletic, and I think it's safe to say, Ryan, and I don't want to speak for you, but I will in this point. I think it's safe to say that you've become a Derby County supporter throughout your time, you know, coming in at The Athletic. I don't think you were a Derby County supporter. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think you liked football, and then you kind of grew to love the club. You did a lot of reporting on the history, you reported these things. And now, even since you've left The Athletic, you know, you still continue to watch Derby games. I think it's safe to say that you are a fan now, of a supporter of the club. And I think, you know, for me reading the book as well, I felt that same thing. I thought, man, I'm going to read this book now, but I'm going to read this book in another 10 or 15 years time, because then I'm going to say, I lived through that period. I remember when these things happened. Like, look how precarious this was, like things that we didn't understand. And I'm glad that you wrote the book when you did, because I like the way you wrote the book. I like the prose that you use. And I'm glad that it was your idea and you were able to execute on it. But it's also nice to read it now, knowing we do still have a football club, because there were some days that you talk about in the book that we didn't know if there was going to be another football club. You know, when we talk about the march and we talk about the Birmingham game with Bielik dislocating his shoulder and thinking that might be, that's it. The padlocks are on the door. And I know, having spoken to people connected to the football club, it was as close as maybe less than 48 hours from shutting the door in its entirety. That's how close it came. And I think now when you look at it on the other side of it, we're a steady enough football club now under new ownership, trying to do things a different way. And so when you read the book, you still get that emotion, but the fear factor's kind of gone. And there were things that you wrote in the book that I even have forgotten what happened. And I thought, Jesus, like that happened. Like, all this got happened in like 3.5 years. Like, my God, this is, you string this out for, you know, 10 years and you still have a bonkers football club. And this happened in three. Like, we had car accidents, we had captains getting sacked and then suing the owner, we had Hollywood signings, we had administration, we nearly went out of business, we had massive points deductions, like all this stuff. And it was hyper condensed into a very, very small thing. And on top of that, we had a global pandemic where we couldn't go to football, we couldn't stay with our mates and watch the game and the support that we all love. We were all kind of separated and then bringing it back and whatever. And I think you did a great job tying that all together for the thing. And, you know, I agree. I think, you know, it is somebody's prerogative whether they want to come and talk about something or whatever, but, you know, asking the list of people that you listed were phenomenal. And to be able to get the insights that you did from the players who were willing to talk about it, I know, I think it's great as well. And, you know, I'm glad that you wrote it. I'm glad I was able to read it. And it's just, I'm glad that we have a football club to still talk about, because I think if something had happened and Derby hadn't existed, maybe this book wouldn't have come to its nexus, because it would have been like, oh, well, they just kind of fell. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's a fair point. Had Derby gone the other way, I probably don't write the book, because obviously there's probably a very different set of circumstances, yeah. Right? There would be people genuinely, you know, there are people out of employment. It would have been... I certainly wouldn't have written the book. This club, that really is a sort of, in 5 years' time when everyone's okay, you write it then, because you couldn't leap on it sort of a year after it happened and try to write it. It would have been too much. So yeah, I don't write the book if, you know, Derby go under. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you mentioned when I started covering the club, and I knew nothing about Derby. You know, I was honest about that. I was upfront about that. I knew nothing about Derby outside of a few games I'd watched, that Frank Lampard was the manager, that they were pretty attacking. And, you know, they go down against Aston Villa. I was always upfront about that. But then, you know, it was my job to, I'd been hired as a reporter to cover the club. It was my responsibility to make sure that I knew about the club that I was covering. And I took that really seriously. You know, I turned it into content. You know, my learning journey became content. You know, I went to see private Derby. You know, I went to the baseball ground. You know, I went to see our historian, you know, I went and did all these things because, one, it was decent content, but two, it was part of my learning experience. You know, I didn't have 30 years of being a Derby fan to lean on. So I had to learn, and I had to learn quickly. And I took great pride in that. And then, yeah, just through osmosis, I became a fan, particularly through the bad times, because you see and speak to these players once every other, you know, once every few days. You know, I was speaking to them more than I was speaking to my own family. You know, you get a real sense of them as a person, and it makes it easy to root for. Like, I couldn't think of not rooting for someone like Martin Waghorn. Like, just seems like a genuinely lovely guy. You know, I remember he wouldn't do many presses, but I remember when he did them, like, he would take the piss out of my jeans that I was wearing, or, you know, we used to make like Brock Lesnar German suplex jokes and things like that, you know. But under that, you know, he'd spoke about his mental health and things like that. He'd spoke about his family. He'd spoke about being a dad. Like, how can you not root for a guy like that? Like, what a solid dude, you know, what a solid dude that he is. So yeah, and there were loads of staff, players, coaches, you know, all like that. So yeah, I became a fan just sort of through that, really, through osmosis, and yeah, that's kind of how it's been ever since.
Yeah, because I remember you going on that learning journey. I remember we welcomed you in a tweet or whatever, and we were talking. We were like, we need to get Ryan on to discuss, and I thought, why don't we let him get his feet under the table here first to learn this thing, like. Day one in a job, let's come on a Derby podcast and just let's just talk. And, you know, so we wanted you to get at your feet on the table. And I was looking at your learning journey and I thought, you know what, this guy's all right. He's willing to take that. He's willing to admit, I don't know much about this, you know, not football, but the club, but I'm willing to go through and learn. I'm willing to look through the history. I'm willing to find these things out and to find these unique angles, Ryan. And I think for me, you were probably one of the first journalists to look at things through a different lens.
I think that's where football fandom starts, though, right? No one, if you are not born a Derby fan, you have to become one from somewhere, right? And that's always, every football fan should want other people from outside to become a fan of their club.
Yes.
Right? However means that happens, right? That, you know, so that should be, I was never ashamed of that because I always thought it was a weird mentality that I was sneered at. For it, you know, I'm not saying that, but there was a section that sneered at because it was like, you're not from here. It was like, well, no, I'm not, but how do you, like, if you know, you look at Lee, the Korean chap who came over, you know, he became a Derby fan through his own circumstances, you know, through his own means, through his own journey. You know, there's a guy, a Swedish Ram, who is often in my mentions, you know, I think he's from Sweden, whatever, if he is, but like, he, you know, we'll have, my point being, we'll have all come as Derby supporters through our own way. This was just my way. It just so happened that I also had the responsibility of reporting on the club. And I think it was a bit of a sort of put a few people out of place that I wasn't from here and I was now tasked with reporting on them, but also kind of like, you know, getting to go see them and be around them all the time, which a lot of people see as a privilege. And I took it as a great privilege as well. You know, I saw it as a great privilege too. So yeah, it was, and I do still enjoy writing about the club and I do still enjoy, you know, watching the club. And, you know, I can't say too much breaking teeth here, but, you know, I've got plans for other stuff to do with Derby County Football Club. You know, the terms of which will be, I guess, sort of ironed out in the new year. That makes it sound like I'm taking a job with the club. I'm not. But you know, I have an independent thing that hopefully we can talk about more in 2024. That again started out because I enjoy writing about the football club. It's one of my great pleasures in life. Ironically, you know, when I started writing my newsletters again, it was to write about stuff other than Derby County, which wasn't personal. It was just I'd spent 12 months writing about Derby County relentlessly for the book. And I was like, you know what? It'd be fun to write about some video games and TV shows. And then all of a sudden I'm like, actually, it'd just be really fun to write about Derby County.
And Ryan, I'm going to turn it over to Jack here for one last word. But before we go, one last word about your book. Where can I get it? Obviously, I have a copy, but where can we pick it up at?
So you can pick up Pride Before the Fall. If you're in the UK, you can pick it up on Amazon. You can pick it up at WH Smith's. You can go to Pitch Publishing. And I think also Beehive.
Waterstones, you know, as well.
Books. Yes, Waterstones as well. There is a stand in your Derby branch of Waterstones where you can pick it up. I've signed some copies there. And yes, if you go on Pitch Publishing, I think you'll be also directed to local booksellers who have got the book in stock in store as well, which, yes, would be fabulous and be good to support your local bookstore as well. So yeah, you can pick it up at all them places.
And I hope you're okay, Ryan, if I also signed a few copies at the Waterstones in addition to maybe the ones that you did. So maybe they'll pick it up. I mean, maybe you'll be signed it. I mean, maybe I signed it. I don't know. We'll see. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that because nobody would want that. They would.
I mean, that's more of an issue for Waterstones than it is for me.
That's true.
I'll pass it over to you, mate.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just looking again at the website, the Pitch Publishing website, and they describe it on the website. The description is the ultimate cautionary tale of how chasing Premier League riches can lead a club to the brink of extinction. And I think going back to what we were talking about before in terms of transfer windows and things, what I think it's a good reminder for Derby and for wider football fans as well, that things have to be done or should be done, hopefully, in a sustainable way, right? And this long-term plan that we hopefully see. Because otherwise, this is how it ends up. And we need these institutions protected in such a way. It's one takeaway for me when I look back at that period and even the stuff I wrote myself and think back to the emotions that were there. Because that's a position, obviously, we don't want to be in again. So it's important we you know, learn from that and also appreciate what we have now, even if we are frustrated, you know, with form and things. So there's balance there. The other thing I just want to say to you, Ryan, is I look at what you're talking about with your research when you took the job and things, and I see that as somebody starting out with study as just the foundation to proper, brilliant journalism, to be able to sit there and go, here's a gap in my knowledge. I need to be fully informed to be able to pass this on. And that, I think that humility to be able to sit there on that first day and go, yeah, right, I need to do some research myself. That's what's the foundation, was the foundation for, you know, so much, well, for so many people in improving their own knowledge as well from what you did and your brilliant work.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And for, you know, any young journalist that is starting out, like, you know, at some stage you have to learn, you know, you don't know what you don't know, and at some stage you just have to kind of sit down and learn it. And if in an always online world, more often than not, you're forced to play out some of your mistakes live for strangers to comment on. And, you know,
yep.
you're gonna get some people that aren't particularly nice. You're gonna get a lot of supporters. And I think one of the things that I wish I was mature enough to handle early on was to be able to ignore sort of naysayers that sneered at me. So yeah, no, really, really, really appreciate those kind words. Yeah, I think this is a cautionary tale for football. I mean, look at what's just happened with Everton, who, okay, their thing is very, very different, but, you know, we're seeing this financial ruin affect every club outside of the uber, uber, uber rich, you know, the basically the state-owned clubs, and weirdly Manchester United, who just throw good money after bad. But, like, you know, Derby's story was so compelling because, you know, founding member of the English Football League, a game away from the Premier League, you know, Wayne Rooney was there, like, you know, all this, you know, Brian Clough, the league, you know, the league, the titles, all that stuff, this, you know, club dripping in rich history. And that isn't to say that, you know, Bury and Macclesfield and you know, Bolton, who were on the brink, and all these other clubs that they don't have it, but Derby was, it felt different, you know, it was a founding member of the Football League. It felt so different. And yeah, this is a cautionary tale for every Football League club, you know, because we see it now more and more often that these clubs are falling foul to being unsustainable, to living outside of their means, to, you know, aggressively chasing promotion, to, you know, new ownership coming in and asset stripping, bad ownership coming in who don't know how to run football clubs. And yeah, there needs to be, you know, Derby's case was, you know, Mel being overly aggressive, but there needs to be protection for every football club because, yeah, we're seeing this far too often, and you know, your club can go. Derby were lucky. Derby were incredibly lucky. You know, all right, they are rebuilding from the bottom. You know, they lost all their academy players and they're good players for basically nothing. And, you know, yes, and it's ended in relegation to League One and rebuilding, but, you know, Derby could have been gone. You know, they could have been gone. So they were very, very lucky in one respect. And yeah, this is a cautionary tale to a lot of football clubs.
Well, Ryan, thanks for spending the last about what 90 minutes now for talking with us on the podcast. We really appreciate it, Ryan. And, you know, if you don't have a copy of Pride Before the Fall, I'd recommend that you'd go out and get it as someone who's read the book, not because Ryan is here staring me at the face, because, you know, it's a little bit because of that. No, I'm just kidding. Because Ryan wrote a great book. I've read it. And you should take my advice because I co-host a podcast on Derby County and live in America. So you should take my advice. But Ryan Conway, thanks so much for your insights into Derby. Thank you for caring so much about this football club. And hopefully we can talk again soon if you're not too tied up with your other contractual obligations in the new year.
Absolutely. Thank you very, very much for having me on again, guys. Really, really appreciate it. You guys do great work. And yeah, thank you. so much for having me on.
Appreciate it, Ryan. Well, everyone, that's all the time we've got for it this week. We'll be back hopefully with an episode next week. The only thing left to say is up the Rams.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at RamsReview1. Our Facebook is Rams Review Podcast. Or you can drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, up the Rams.